The UK's only gypsy billionaire slams the UK government for sending young entrepreneurs and him out of this country. This billionaire shares a private conversation he had, he accidentally slips his name out, with one of the richest people in the UK who was forced out of the UK, lives in Monaco, tried to come back and was charged the most extortionate fee. You are not going to believe it. Name after name after name are shared of the best entrepreneurs in the UK, the billionaires who've been forced out by the dramatic decline in the UK and the outrageous tax system. There's also some good news and some practical tips and tricks on you becoming wealthy despite everything that's going on in the world. And if you want to know what billionaires know that not even millionaires do, make sure you watch the whole interview. What else do you say other than the pretty much the only living gypsy billionaire? I mean, I think that's a brilliant introduction. So could you please all stand up and welcome to the stage the one, the only, the awesome Mr. Alfie Best. All right, and we're doing a live podcast, as you can see. Big shout out to David, who set this up. Normally, it would take an hour, hour and a half to set up, and he's done it in T-minus 12 minutes. Yes, David! Right, could you set me at the clock, Joe? Back 50 minutes. Or Nick, yeah, 50 minutes. Alfie has to go T-minus 51 minutes. Right, let's do this. Alfie, what do billionaires know that millionaires do not?
That they started from zero, went to a millionaire, and then became a billionaire. It's a stepping stone. What I would say to you is, and on the way here, when I was driving here, I was talking to a...
Apologies.
No. On the way here, while I was driving here, we had virtually the same conversation. I said, when you get up in the morning, what do you want to do? And we were talking as travellers. So I'm a traveller. So would you go knocking doors, selling tarmac? Would you repair somebody's roof? Would you go out there collecting scrap? And I'm deadly serious. I said, that gets you a living. That gets you by. Now, if you want to become a millionaire, it becomes duplication. And if to think like a millionaire, how do you think like a millionaire when you're still trying to scrape to get by? And it is very simply, you have to mix with millionaires. But there is no point working, there's no point working to get a living and then mixing with a billionaire. Because the billionaire, you've missed one vital step out. That's the millionaire. And the billionaire has been through all three stages.
And are there downsides of being a billionaire?
There's a downside to everything, but I keep everything as a positive. The downside for me is people think that there's a magic dust or a formula or a system and processes, which there is. But the main thing is to get anywhere in life, it is you. Not me, not Rob. It's about what we give you, and that inspiration and that small amount of learning turns into a large amount of learning, and you have to implement it. And sometimes it's like having a fire. You know, you can blow so hard, but no matter what happens, that flame won't kick in. But the moment you get that flame to kick in and it starts burning, you'll end up with a bonfire. And that's human nature.
We were talking about haters earlier. I mean, as you become successful and then made your billions, have you attracted more haters?
Yeah, of course. Look, you can't be every...
You don't seem bothered.
Well, let me say this to you.
Is that because you can fight?
No. I'm so pleased that they're allowing me the space in their mind that I take up. And the truth of the matter is, none of us want to be hated on. None of us. We don't want to read bad things. And trust me, there's a lot more about me bad than I care to read. But what I realise, I can't be everybody's strawberry and cream, because some people like apples and pears. And that's just life. So accept it, disregard it, unless they have a good opinion. And that good opinion comes from somebody in the know. Now, what I mean by that, and I've said this many times on this stage, don't take advice from the car mechanic about heart surgery. And don't take advice on your car engine from the heart surgeon. But if you've got a qualified person that's at liberty to say something that might be a bit cutting, but it's actually from a good source, accept it. It might be the best knowledge you'll ever get.
Would you say there's one trait or skill you learned that helped you make billions of pounds?
Duplication.
Can you explain?
Yeah. Look, when I've made as many failings as I have success, and if I said that, that would be a lie. I made more failings. I made a lot more failings. The beauty of success is you only have to do it once. Do you know, everybody sees the success, but they just don't see the failures. And the failures weren't failures. They were putting me ahead of most other people because at least I tried. Did I get it wrong? And you know, if I can just veer off very slightly, one of the most intelligent men in the world that's ever existed said some of the most common-sensed things that I've ever heard, which was Einstein. Now, you just don't expect somebody like Einstein to say something common-sensed. Now, he said two things which reminisce with me, and I use them all the time in talks, which is, if you asked a fish to climb a tree, it will think it's an idiot. Put it in the ocean, it's an Olympic swimmer, and you're gifted beyond all belief. If in a classroom, he did a test, and he said, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and 2 + 2 = 5. But I didn't hear anybody cheer when I got it right the first time round. My point is, we're already... Now, what Einstein said was, everybody laughs when you get it wrong, nobody claps when you get it right. Now, Einstein said this. How much more common sense do we want than that? Now, for me, that just blew me away. Somebody of that magnitude could have that much common sense. Very rare.
So you talked about you failed a lot in the pursuit of sex.
Many times.
Just keep practicing, mate.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm a failure, but this is very true. I took a Viagra tablet. It got stuck in my throat and I ended up with a stiff neck. But there we go. And the moral of that story is I'll get to stand up straight.
Right, I'm not even going to retry that question.
Rob, it's the You've first time we've seen Rob's gone red.
All right, I'm rewording it. What's your most expensive failure?
Okay. This is quite heart-wrenching, being a know-all. And that was the most expensive failure that I believe cost me 20 years. I have told this story before. Rob's asked the question in a different way. But it was regarding a man called Mr. Hansen. When I was 13 years old, he thought I was 18 because I was tarmacking his estate. And he offered me the opportunity to come to work for that family. And his words were, I'll have you in the city within 2 years. I just thought, I was only interested in tarmacking his drive. That is called naivety from knowing it all. And that was my most expensive. I think that cost me 20 years.
Wow. And how much money could you make in 20 years?
Well, think about this. The Hambros Trust, Hambros Pension were like the Rothschilds. So that education that would have given me would have catapulted me to a different level. You know, I've, for the first time ever, have I seen somebody on stage, a gentleman that was here before, spoke mildly on the school system. Now, I actually believe the school system is not broken. I did a podcast and said it was broken. Actually, I don't think it is. I actually think it's manipulated for the government. And I think we're engaged into a system to put us in a box to pay tax, where they can keep track of it. That's what I believe.
Do you want to talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm relatively... I don't consider myself as clever. I don't consider myself as astute. I'm just a hard worker and passionate about some of the things that I do. Now, that's my success. My success is I got to find something that I love on a few occasions. And success comes from being able to put the ball in the back of the net and knowing that actually you are at work, but you love it so much, it just feels like you're playing a game of football. Because a footballer doesn't realise he's at work until he turns 35. Then they realise it was a job.
Or 50 if you're an elder.
Yeah. So now with regard to, I did an interview on the Daily Mail. Now I've moved to Monaco, and it was asked to me, did I move to Monaco for tax? The answer is no, I didn't. No, I don't pay any personal tax there. But the truth of the matter is...
So are you paying less tax in Monaco?
Well, I've got a £12.5 million director's loan that I can draw down from my particular company, and you don't pay no tax on your director's loan. I'm not talking about a director's loan where it's a loan. I mean, I've got a loan in the company of £12 million.
And if you drew it in the UK, you'd pay tax
no,
on it?
No, I wouldn't pay tax right. on that, because I'd already put that money over the years into the company, which right. is £12 million. They can't yeah. tax you on twice on it.
Wow.
So the reason for me moving to Monaco was I had 42 tax inquiries which were ongoing, lasting over 7 years. They found nothing, and then decided...
Did they find anything?
Funny you should mention that. No, and the reason I say that three times is because people that become successful then become fearful. They become frightened of being in the public eye. They become frightened of being exposed for something that they've not even done. They've become at a point where all of a sudden they become insular because they become frightened of people around them. I'm just never going to become a victim. I'm never going to become a victim, no matter what it takes, no matter what it happens, because I think if that's what it does to us, then success shouldn't be for anybody. Success should be embraced, and we should celebrate it, not be frightened to have to come out about it. Because if we're frightened to come out about being successful, that's not going to help anybody. Not going to help anybody. Now, I was asked in that interview, do I think our taxation system is fair in the UK? And the answer was, yes, I do. I think it's very fair, and I think it's correct, and I think we should pay tax in the countries where we make our wealth. That's what I believe. But, I'm going to use the word but, should be implemented fairly, not discriminatory. Now you think, well, what do you mean discriminatory? And you may think that some of you, and I'm sure some it doesn't, that doesn't affect me. It was actually said to me by a HMRC inspector, we look at the top 500 people or taxpayers in the UK. So in other words, they shake the tree of the top 500.
So they're all under constant inquiry if you are in the top 500 yes. richest people in this country?
Regardless of
whether you've done anything wrong or not,
regardless,
you're always under inquiry.
Yes.
And you had 47 inquiries?
42.
42 in how long?
7 years.
Does that not break you down?
Well, what I would say to you is it's not about breaking you down. It's just a point that somebody has to say, hold on, enough is enough. My next goal now is to open a company in Monaco and pay tax. In Monaco, you pay corporation tax on the company there. I'm going to do that because I want to make a stand that... Let me tell you a very, very quick story. I've got 119 parks around the country. So I've had helicopters for a fair time. The Inland Revenue said to me, well, we're going to have to tax you for private use on your helicopter. What? Well, how do I get to the parks? Well, you could have driven. So now they're telling you your job. Now, so, and what? Why am I speaking up about this? Because I'm making myself more of a target.
Are you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But I don't want to be a martyr for anybody. But I don't want to live in fear. And I think a lot of people say the wealthy should be taxed more. Mark my words on this. Watch the next 5 years. And you are going to see. I'm in Monaco now. My phone has not stopped ringing of people saying, why Monaco, not Italy? Why not Portugal? There was a statement made the other day by a Conservative government. Now, I don't vote Conservative or Labour. I vote the man or the woman. So I'm a Thatcher and a Tony Blair person. Whether that sits well with other people, they were the people that I would have backed. Why? Look how the country thrived under them. Look how it thrived under them. Now, this country's made a statement. In the next 4 years, all non-DOMs have got to pay tax on their wealth. Now, you may think, well, that doesn't really affect us. When you've got...
So the people who've left the country because the taxes are too high to save the tax are now going to be retrospectively taxed. Is that what you mean?
No, sorry, apologies, and I haven't explained that very well. No, non-DOMs that are here... that are not British, that have come from another country and decided to make the UK their home, have brought billions. Now, what I can tell you is this. Wherever you're at as an entrepreneur is where you invest. I'm walking around Monaco now and I'm looking at buildings. I'm now, okay, where's the next business I'm doing? Because I'm there. So those billionaires and millionaires that are here that are non-domiciled from another country have now been told, we don't care, you're going to be taxed, even though you're not British. Now, that doesn't affect me, doesn't affect you, but it will affect our country, because those people are going to take their wealth somewhere else of more welcoming countries. Italy, Portugal, Cyprus, Monaco, Dubai. Britain needs to get with the 21st century. We had a great opportunity after Brexit. Whether you were for it or whether you were against it, we came out of Europe. Okay? We came out of Europe. We could have been the Golden Isles. We could have been in the investment hub for Europe. And we had the power to do it. Instead, we've done the opposite. Now, let me summarise this in simple terms that I understand. Yeah? Okay. I have seen Rob many times and we've become friends. And the one thing that I've heard him say, your network is your net worth of who you circulate with. Okay? We're not going to be circulating with many millionaires and billionaires if they're being sent out of the country. That affects where other mindsets go. So, you know, what was the question I was asked? What was the question I was asked? Oh, that was it. By the Daily Mail. What would entice you back? I said, back in business and back in Britain. Stop worrying about the rest of the world and worry about us. Because the one thing that I can tell you now, when you get on the aeroplane, they don't say, save the person next to you before you save yourself. They say, save yourself first, then help the person next to you. We seem to be helping everybody else and letting ourselves sink. That doesn't sit well with me. And you feel a bit of passion out of me, and I'm sorry if it comes across that way. I love our country. I love our country. And I think we had a great, great country. But I'm not sure why. And look, we've had a lot to contend with. We've had Brexit, we've had COVID, so has every other country. I wouldn't go that far.
Do you know other people who are leaving or have left the UK? Are you in Monaco talking to other people who have left the UK?
It's It's a friend of mine I was talking to yesterday, who's worth £7.5 billion. He left the UK for 11 years and owns a... This is a self... By the way, self-made man. Him and his brother. And I said, Ian, are you... he told me not to mention your name anyway. I said, Ian...
Dave. It's Dave.
Anyway, I said...
Dave.
I said, are you going to stay? He said, no. He said, you're here now, Alfie. He said, other friends are here. He said, I'm coming. Now, he'd already left once and went back. And they tried to charge him a re-entry fee because they said that he'd breached the, you know, 90-day rule or something over the last 11 years. And they asked him for £50 million. £50 million. Now, his words to me was, you know, if they'd have asked for five, I'd have just possibly give it just to save the grief. He went, but I knew they were taking the... He said, he said, deal with my solicitors. So what did you give him? He said, nothing. Now, I've got to be honest with you. There's a lot of intelligent people in this room. But I'd like to ask you a question. How many of you actually know how the taxation system works? Because I've got to tell you, I don't. All we get told is, hold on, it's 25%, 40%. But actually, that's not really the true case. You know, you make a mistake, and you get a fine. Can you imagine doing that to your kids?
Oh, I'd love to.
But you get my point. Yeah. Like, you make a mistake, you're punished for it. So I'm just thinking to you, hold on. Is it a case where we're actually wanted to make mistakes? So it's not, you know, how I look at it is I wish I understood it better. Because I have to have 19 accountants, 19.
Just to sort your tax bill.
Just to sort out our tax, through our companies, but half of them work on us. And I just got to the point where I thought, you know, somebody needs to make a stand. We've lost.
Why aren't you then? You've left. You've fucking left us. We're all stuck here.
That is the stand. I want to... Right, let me just say this. I just want to point this out. Because it sounds like I'm talking our country down. I'm not. I want somebody to stand up and listen. So let me say this to you. In America, very quickly, I'm not going to ask a question, I'm just going to roll them off. And if there's anybody that I've missed out, please just tell me. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Donald Trump.
Rob Moore.
No, because you're English. Right. Okay.
So Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg. Anybody else anybody want to throw in there? Warren Buffett.
Bill Gates.
Anybody else? Okay, all of those have never set foot to leave the US. Name me the British entrepreneurs that are even still here. Alan Sugar. All gone. And everybody's still heading out the door. Richard Branson.
He's gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
The man... Who I can sit, Dyson,
gone.
Jim Radcliffe built a business for £40 billion in 20 years from the age of 40. So if anybody ever tells you it's too late to start. My point is this. And then we hear about other countries of how much better Britain is. Well, it seems that France has the richest man in the world and America... And I get told it's so difficult to employ people in France. Well, let me tell you, I'll let you know in a year's time because I'm already now looking at two caravan parks, one in Saint-Tropez and one in Cannes. And we're going to be investing along that south coast. I'm going to be investing in the US. Now, what it has done for me, and Rob said to me earlier on, what do you think? How are you settling in there? And I said, it's like the fog's been lifted. Sometimes you can be so far in your business that the minutiae detail, even though you're not involved in it, comes to you. Now, all of this, would it stop me starting a business here in the UK? And the answer is no, it wouldn't. But what it would do is make me structure it a completely different way. A completely different way now. And I think that's when you're running a business and you're working on your business really hard, we get on that treadmill, and the moment you first get that little bit of a formula in your business right, you no longer own the business. The business starts to take a life of itself. You get to ride that horse and jockey it along. You know how far to whip it. And when it wins that one race, then you get it in the stable. Then you start thinking, I've got a masterpiece here. I've got a thoroughbred. And that business starts to gain momentum. You grow as a person. You start to believe your own words that you speak. Before, you're unsure about them. But now you know you're right because you got it right. Sorry.
Thank you. What are some top tips to get rich?
Start. Absolutely start. Start. One of the things that I would say is, and this is very important, is if you, and this may sound obvious, but it's not. Don't go down the pub and talk to your mate who's a plasterer if you're a bricklayer. You may be in the same building trade, but your mindsets are on two different jobs. If you want to do that, if you want to do brickwork, you must talk to bricklayers that are pushing ahead. If you want to be plasterer, you must be with a plastering business. Because them little, all of a sudden your conversation, property. You don't, in my opinion, don't speak to everybody about everything within property. Focus. Is it HMO? Is it flat conversion? Is it hoarding boards? Is it BT towers? Is it telecom towers? There's so many different realms to property. No, I love property. It makes me tingle. I love it. But, you know, it does.
Too much
does.
Information. Yeah. Oh.
Got a stiff neck again. But no, look, yes, start. And if any, but one of the, I'll tell you a very quick story. I love my dad to death. My dad is my God. He's 6'4", got hands like bunches of bananas. And his money that he's earned, he's 80 years old and works 7 days a week still to this day. To this day. Up in his transit van, taking the lead off the church roofs. No.
Such a stereotype, Alfie.
It's all eco-friendly. No, he's out there, honestly, working, manual work, 80 years old. When I was 20 years old, I virtually went bankrupt. You know the story and you've heard me talk about it before. But when I was 22, it was the 1980 recession. And if you don't mind, Rob, I want to cover a little bit of that now, the recession that we're in now. In that 1990 recession. I was making myself 10 years older then. I know I look it, but anyway, 1990 recession. And in 1991, I went to an auction and I bought a shop and a flat and a rundown, broken down, shacked workshop at the back of it in Ilford High Street. And I paid £29,000 for this shop and flat. Now, my dad, who is my God, if I said, Dad, walk through a burning fire, he'd say, how many? You know, he's, and really is, a hard, hard, hard man, hard working man. Me and him, I said, will you come down, Dad, help me? I'd just gone through one of the worst times of my life. Just, you know, got out of sleeping out the back of the escort van and where I'd had money before. And trust me, it's worse coming down than it is going up. When you're going up, you're building block by block. When you're coming down so fast, the splinters rip your hands to pieces. My dad looked round to me, and I remember this like yesterday. Now, we're in there painting and decorating this shop and flat. He went, "What the hell have you bought this for?" He went, "And you had enough trouble." And it was at that point I realised, don't ask the wrong person for the right advice. This was a man I loved to death. This was a man I trusted. So he was never going to say it to me in a bad way or in a way that was bad for me. He was going to say it with honesty because in his mind, I was an idiot. What did I buy that for? And I said to him, I said, "Dad, this is an investment. It's going to be one of the best investments I've ever done." He went, "Son," he went, "people can't sell their houses. And you've gone out and bought a shop. What's wrong with you?" Because that's what his mindset was. I'd asked the wrong person, as much as I loved my dad. The point is here, don't ask the wrong person for the right advice, because you will get the wrong advice, no matter how good intentioned it is. That shop and flat, I rented out, and I swear this is the truth. In the first year, I was receiving £15,000 a year rent, 300 quid a week. So now, what I'd paid £29,000 for was worth £150,000 because it was getting 15 grand a year. Now, thank God I got that one right because I'd have never lived it down after that. But the point is, yes, thank God I got it right. Because if I'd have got it wrong and I'd have just come out of the worst recession and virtually lost everything and I'd managed to scrimp, scrape the last 29 grand together, I don't think I'd have recovered. I don't think I would have ever gone forward again because I'd have had the man I trusted telling me, "What the hell have you done?" And two, so then doubt sets in, fear sets in. And that's the worst thing, because what happens when fear and doubt sets in? You in close. I actually think, and I shouldn't say this because I love my dad to death, I think that held me back by nearly 8 months because I didn't buy anything else. I was waiting to see. So important you get the right advice from the right place. And that's why you're here. That's not me. That's exactly how I see it.
What's the hardest lesson from going bust?
Don't. Okay.
Don't.
The
Oi, you, no.
Okay, three things. And that's a great question. Never been asked it before. And the information that I'm going to give you now, please take a pen and please write it down. There's two things that we have to be careful of. One is fear that causes us to clench in. And two is over boastfulness and believing we can walk on water. And that we're never going to go bust and we're great. Okay? Protect yourself. When you buy a property, you put it in a holding company. And you make sure that you have a trading company that sits below it. Remember, the bank or the mortgagee that you're taking out is not lending you money. They're your partner. Treat them as a partner. Make sure they know everything and make sure you pay them first. Because if you don't, you won't have a property. Number two, if you have a tenant in a property that says to you he can't pay, say, "Well, neither can I. And I didn't buy this as a charity." They're the hard lessons. And what I mean by that is this. Protect yourself and protect your business. Protect your property. There is a law in this country that you can kill somebody if you're protecting yourself. Should you not protect your property the same way? Should you not protect yourself? How do you protect yourself?
Holding companies. Have you ever killed a tenant then?
Felt like it. Protect yourself by holding companies in your property and never trade your company that holds the property. Because if somebody falls over, if you have a dispute for a sandbag, you're totally at risk with your property. Always, holding company sits at the top. Below is your management company that manages the property and has a tenancy agreement or a lease to that holding company. Keep it protected. Keep it in cotton wool. Holding company doesn't trade. That's so important. And trust me, simple and very easy to be overlooked when we're all happy clappy that we've just bought our first property or a second property or third one. Keep them separate.
What would you say to people who are struggling to make money?
Two things. Well, you can ride a donkey around the Grand National and you can whip it as much as you like. If you're in the wrong race, you're still going to lose. So working hard is absolutely correct. Blood and blisters always perseveres. But I saw a picture the other day and it really reminisced with me. And it was a guy sitting on the dock with a fishing rod. Great acting, eh? And there's no fish. But he can't see that there's no fish. On the other side of the dock, there's a pool of fish. But he just never dips his rod in the water. Sometimes we just have to slightly change position to get it right. If you're getting it wrong, think of yourself, no knee-jerk reactions. Oh my God, this is not working. Your experience is already there. Change the dial slightly, just very slightly, until that dial hits the mark. Many businesses that I've had, I can honestly say, they only needed tweaking to make them successful. Sometimes it's the smallest things that can just make the biggest impact. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What money advice that's out there that you think is really wrong?
Okay, I think that depends on the money advice for the person. If I can just say, for instance, Grant Cardone has created a fantastic business and made wealth for a lot of people. I just disagree with his point that you shouldn't own your house and you should put that money to work, because in the country that we live in, and I can only base it from here, not the US, some people have terrible saving habits. They can't save. And the one thing that gives people great success in the UK is an Englishman's home is his castle. Makes him feel proud. So I'm a great believer we should always buy our own house. That's one of the things. But that doesn't work for everybody. Because on the other hand, if you are a great saver, now don't get me wrong, saving money, I'm against. Invest it. But you have to learn to save to be able to invest it.
Why are you against saving?
Because money in the bank doesn't earn anything. Money is a tool. Let me explain. For me, every pound that I have is a soldier. And I send them out to conquer more soldiers. Bring them back. And then we send them out again.
We've had soldiers, as that. Donkeys, fishermen. We've had the lot.
All the stiff neck. We could all look. Money advice, other money advice that's out there. There's loads of good advice, and there's loads of bad advice. It's actually exactly the same, because bad advice can be the right advice for some people. Good advice can be bad advice for also other people. It's about your own circumstances and what your business is. Now, for me, one question that nobody's asked, but I'll bring it up anyway. If I had to start again, would I do what I did in the way that I did it? The answer is no. Learned a lot of lessons. And what I did when I built my businesses, I went out on my own. And what happened was this. My borrowing within my business is 10%. That's what our borrowing is. That doesn't make me an astute person. What it means was I just felt that at that time, that's what I should be doing, and that's the momentum that carried. If I did it again, I'd find more investors, and potentially we wouldn't have a £1.2 billion company. We'd have a £10 billion company. Because if you want to go alone, I can tell you this. When it gets dark, there's nobody around you to guide you. And that happens in business. It gets dark. It gets dark. And what I mean by that, things start closing in around you. And you never find one problem comes at a time. You get three or four. Here's something that I learned the other day. Do you know what makes a good entrepreneur or a good businessman? It's how you deal with stress. And dealing with a little bit of stress every day actually helps, because it stretches you like an elastic band. And if that elastic band isn't stretched, have you noticed what happens to it? It goes brittle and snaps. So now we've had a donkey, elastic band.
Does money make you happy, Alfie?
Absolutely. You don't see me frowning, do you?
Why do all these people say that money doesn't make you happy then?
Because they've never had it. That's it. That's it. Look, I don't believe that we have to hide. I'm a nobody. I'm an absolute nobody. And I really do mean that. But, you know, with the good grace of God and will, work, systems that have come together, failings, and, you know, critics. I love a critic, and I know we're going back full circle now. But sometimes those spiteful words that they're trying to push the knife in can just spur you on. And you think, I just don't want to give them the fucking satisfaction. Do you know? Use whatever tools you're given in life. I think I was asked a question by Rob, but I loved the question. And he said to me, do you not feel proud and happy and great that you're a self-made man? I said, hell no. If I can be born Prince Charles, put me in that position every day. But we are where we are. We're born where we are. So if we're born as Prince Charles, accept it. If we're born as Alfie, who's the gypsy, accept it. They're the cards we've got in this life. We've got one life. That one life is to make a difference. What I can tell you is this. Birds of a feather must flock together. That's why you can always get a royal flush if you get the right hand.
We have 7 minutes, 4 questions, new round on the show called the Disruptors Round.
What's the biggest disruption that's ever happened to you in your life?
I had a murmur and I collapsed at 20. You know this anyway, but brought me to my knees. Before that, I had a brand new 911 Porsche. I had a £500,000 house, so on and so on and so on. And I thought I could walk on water. I thought I was a whiz kid. Biggest disruption was my health. I physically started crying. I hate telling this story sometimes, but I tell it all the time.
You like the Viagra one, yeah, though, don't you?
I love that. Going to use that one again. Yeah. But the that was the worst disruptor. The second was the realization of a bad thing that was actually a good thing. And that was, I was overexposed to the banks in a thing called negative equity. And I then later found out that was one of the things that actually saved me from the banks repossessing.
What, because they'd have lost money if they'd repossessed you?
Yeah. So as long as I was paying, you know, like sometimes the worst things that happen can be the best things, but we just don't know it. But the most important thing is to learn from it.
What's the biggest risk you've ever taken?
Biggest risk I ever took was borrowing £68 million because stupidly I borrowed it against a company at the time that was worth £600 million. I should have been borrowing £500. That.
So you didn't borrow enough?
I didn't borrow enough.
Right.
What I did was put myself in a position where the towel was wagging the dog. Remember this, if you're never in control of what your own destiny takes. And so I really try to talk with a common tongue. And the reason I talk with a common tongue is because I'm not educated, but I certainly am educated in the ways of life. That's because I've had my ass kicked so much. That's a fact.
What's your most brutal life lesson?
Success costs. Success costs. Doesn't come free. And the blessed people that have managed to have success, that it's just fallen at their feet, that's a lottery win. What I can tell you is my success has come hard earned, and it costs. Costs family. It costs time with your children. It costs your health. You know, the stress and that goes through. And they're the things that we never get thanked for. They're the things that we never get celebrated for. And this is why I actually genuinely, it was actually Rob that got me started actually doing talks. My very first podcast I ever did was 10 years ago or something like that, Rob with Rob. I would never been on this journey. I never felt like telling my story. And not because I didn't think I really had one. But what I've learned is people are frightened. Actually frightened to speak up and put their head above the parapet. Well, if I make one different and one change in my life, it's going to be that this country starts to celebrate. We celebrate the small man that actually grows into the big man.
What's the most disruptive thing anyone's ever said or done to you?
Funny enough, it was a hater that criticised me for what I was, who I was, and where I'd come from.
What did they say?
They said, could you come and pick the rubbish up that you left here, please? what I would say, no, sorry, I can't help myself that I've took a happy pill. that didn't give me a stiff neck either. Anyway, the worst thing was, let's call them a spiteful critic. And it really does actually show you how some people are hell-bent on having an excuse why they did nothing in their life, why they achieved nothing in their life. And I put it down and I saw this guy and genuinely saw this. This guy was, now I'm not particularly thin, But this guy was 20 odd stone, sitting in the pub, drinking, and I was at the bar, having an orange. And I saw him screaming at the TV, calling Beckham all sorts of, you know, this, that, the other, and he was a mug. And I thought, wow. And then I saw him physically take to his phone and start slating, because Beckham missed a goal. And I thought, wow, this is who's giving advice. And it woke me up. It really showed me, but you know, there's a little bit of that in all of us. And I really try to stop myself. I really tried to stop myself and go, hold on. And I was on this stage in the last speech I gave, and there was an extremely intelligent guy, great guy, by the way, so I'm not criticising him, from the medical practice. And he stood up and he said, Alfie, he said, how would you solve the National Health Service? And I said, I'm terribly sorry, I'm not going to answer that question because I can't. Because if I answer that question, I will be an idiot because I don't know. So I'm not going to give an opinion on something. And from that moment, I learned something. I only advise people or give people advice on what I know is solid, what I have a little bit of expertise on. I no longer, even when I go to a dinner party, have a discussion on some sort of politics or something else, whatever it is, religion or whatever, car mechanics, heart surgery, I don't raise my opinion. Because what I've realised, nonsense, uneducated, unskilled opinions are dangerous. Are dangerous. They can put people back 10 years.
So we have 1 minute. So this is the last pair of questions, maybe 30 seconds on each. What's the best and worst advice you ever remember receiving?
Worst advice was actually from my dad. You've already heard the story. I said, what the hell have you bought this for, son? Do you not realise? This is a man I trust, I love, think the world of, would never have given me that advice badly. Okay? And the best advice I've ever got was from a barrister called Scott Stemp. And I went in and I then realised one thing in my life, and it learnt me a life lesson. The advice he gave me was, Alfie, buy that land next to yours. And we're talking about a slither, which was 5,000. I didn't even want it. I said, why? He said, I will get you planning. He said, and I'll put my reputation on it. I will get you planning on the other 32 acres for building. We got that planning 4 weeks ago. And the moral of the story
and
is...
And how much will that end value be worth?
50 million.
50 million.
That one piece of advice.
How much did you pay him? Did you give him a commission?
I did, actually.
Yeah,
And what I would say to you is, be prepared to reward people. Don't feel... Listen, if it's going well, if it's working, remember to feed the horse and not whip it.
We have to end on that one. Perfect. Thank you, Alfie. Big round of applause for Alfie.